You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And yep, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it is, it's midweek. Boomer, it's midweek.
It's midweek.
You know what that means?
Oh, yeah.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Every week, got to do it. It's hump day. It's midweek. You've made it halfway to the weekend. Congratulations. Hold on. Saturday's coming. All right. Well, that's good stuff. Hey, Boomer, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Camel makes it better.
Always. It just puts a smile on my face.
You got any more Little Man baseball games coming up this week?
He has a game tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. All right.
So okay. We'll see how that turns out. It's all a late game, past his bedtime, so hopefully he doesn't fall asleep.
Wow. little guy is getting sleepy in the dugout.
Yeah, that's right. All of them probably will be.
Wow, that's hilarious. All right. Good times, though, man. Good times. All right, hey, Alex, we got a great show, lead. I like a lot of stuff here. This has been a full week, Boomer. These shows have been, like, cranking.
Completely full.
So 3 o'clock today, Terry Lathan, who is the former chair of the Alabama Republican Party, she just started a new initiative because apparently she was not settled on retirement. But she just started a new initiative to support school choice in the State House. We're going to talk with her about ROME, which stands for Republicans on a Mission. So ROME is kicking off, and it's headed up by our former chairwoman of the Alabama Republican Party, Terry Lathan. She will be here at 3 o'clock today to tell us all about it, so stay tuned for that one. And then it is Wednesday, and not only do we play the Camel every Wednesday, but we also have the Grand Council every Wednesday. Dale Jackson, Jeff Poor, and myself at 4 o'clock today. You'll want to stay tuned for the Grand Council. And then on top of all that, we still got a triple dipper, so hit it.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you have got to know as we run today's show. Number one, I'm calling it SOS, Save Our Schools. SOS, Save Our Schools. So I'm just sick to death of hearing the arguments of, well, you can't put tax dollars in private school education. Yeah, you can. You're putting them in the education of the child of the taxpayer. How about that? So SOS, Save Our Schools. We're going to hear from Terry Lathan. We're going to talk through some things that other states are leading the way on, and Alabama is still dragging behind. SOS, Save Our Schools, number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, I didn't get to it Friday. I didn't get to it Monday or Tuesday, but it's a good enough topic to where I hung on to it for today. Virtue failing. You hear about virtue signaling. This is virtue failing. This is when companies have kind of gotten way beyond their skis, and they're throwing money at things that they think are going to make them look woke and happy, and everybody's going to love them now. All it is this virtue signaling, which some of them turns into virtue failing. So we'll talk about that, which leads me to number three on the Triple Dipper. Perfect segue there. I'm calling it ESG OMG. So ESG is just, it's just become the thing. Do you know the first ever veto in President Biden's entire tenure has been related to trying to preserve ESG? I mean, it's just unreal. Environmental, social, governance, it's wokeness. It's wokeness in the world of business and insurance and banking. And it needs to go away. And states are fighting back. So we'll talk about it in more detail. Number three on the Triple Dipper, ESG-OMG. Which leads me, by the way, to my comments for today. Just segue after segue here. So let me start off by asking you this question. What happens when an effort to do one thing becomes something entirely different? I mean, by that, I mean, what is the outcome for any entity that establishes itself with a duty to do something, some singular thing, that then deviates without good cause towards something different? The expected result will then be that the original mission is going to suffer. And for those who depended upon the original mission being successful, they will undoubtedly face some exposure towards loss. Call it mission creep. You can call it malfeasance. You can call it negligence. You can even call it sometimes recklessness. But history dictates that losing sight of one's original duties or priorities has a way of creating unrest. Just ask the French. So yeah, the French Revolution kicked off in roughly 1789, but that was just the breaking point. I mean, the events leading up to the French Revolution, they had been brewing and simmering and brewing some more for decades. But what you saw behind the scenes of the people's discontent was the gross mismanagement of the affairs of governance. It was not at all a government for the people. It was, in fact, merely a government for the elite, by the elite, of the elite. And it was during those final stages of the mismanagement that the famous quote attributed to Marie Antoinette was said to have been uttered when she was confronted with the news of a famine outside the gates of her palace. She allegedly said, "Let them eat cake," a phrase that just flew all over French citizens who could not even get a crust of bread, much less cake. Well, the French elite had lost their way. Long known as a center of gravity for all things culture, fashion, and political power, the court at Versailles began to be so focused on its own agendas that it forgot that it had one mission only, to govern. To govern in such a way that the nation of France, not the elite, but the actual nation of France, could not just survive, but actually thrive. But as the population of 18th century France grew, the reign of King Louis XVI proved incapable of seeing beyond its own insatiable need to be relevant, powerful, all-knowing. The financial status of the king's court grew, but the management of the nation's finances waned. The population grew, but the ability of the agricultural capabilities of the French to sustain themselves diminished because infrastructure to get farm to market was never improved. Food shortages caused a 65% increase in food prices, but wage growth could not keep up. In the meantime, the French crown continued to pursue prideful interests dating back to the days of the mighty French Empire and the quest to find new resources to continue puffing up the court at Versailles. As a result, the French monarchy went further and further into debt, resulting in massive state financial crises. And the French crown controlled spending, but it had no control whatsoever on revenue. And so the end result of years of recklessness and straying away from their original mission is that the people of France finally stormed the Bastille in an effort to take back their lives. Now, I could easily make the case that much of what brought about the massive change in the 18th century French government can be seen now in the manner in which the Biden administration governs the United States, but I'll save that for another day. For now, I'm using the analogy of the epic mismanagement of resources by the pre-revolution French monarchy to talk about the epic mismanagement of resources by companies that pursue ESG. You heard me. In my opinion, the efforts of left-wing financiers, financial planners, politicians, and insurance companies, it represents a cabal that has strayed from their original mission. That mission was supposed to be to ensure that those entities acted in the best interest of their shareholders, that they make every effort at providing a maximum return on investment for those who have entrusted them with the fiduciary duty of doing just that. So, like, basically, if I give you a dollar with the contractual understanding that you're going to do all that you can to make me some type of profit on that dollar, well, then I have a right, an actual right, a meeting of the minds, if you will, to expect that your efforts are going to be primarily focused on creating that profit for me, pure and simple. But ESG world, ESG doesn't care about shareholders. They take our dollars, and they then decide what is best in what they've deemed a stakeholder environment, not shareholder, but stakeholder. It's the contention by ESG financiers that despite signing a contract with you to maximize your dollar, that the very first mission they're going to pursue is actually to build a world that meets their understanding of what the world should be. By the way, that's not your understanding, it's their understanding. So they'll take your hard-earned dollar and they'll use it to promote social justice agendas like Black Lives Matter, reduced bail arraignments, pro-abortion legislation, non-photo ID voting. Yeah. They'll take your hard-earned dollar and they'll work hard to promote candidates for office that will feed their ESG narrative and provide them with ease of regulation to do so. They'll take your hard-earned dollar and they'll buy carbon offsets and promote wind farms and slam the oil and gas industry. And if at the end of all their ESG efforts they have any of your dollar left, they'll tell you they've been effective at their jobs. It's the 21st century version of let them eat cake. So here's a thought. Get back to business. All right, maybe, just maybe, it should be recalled by those who sit in the high boardrooms at ESG-laden companies that they have an actual duty to their shareholders, not stakeholders, to their shareholders. And truly, if they want to support, promote, and champion liberal environmental, social, and governance causes, well, then nothing's stopping them from taking a portion of their own large salaries and board stipends and supporting the liberal 501c3 of their choice. I fully suspect, and I can almost bet this, I fully suspect that the day is coming when there's going to be a major ESG lawsuit that's going to kick off. It might even come in the form of a large class action. As people find out that their futures have been squandered by those in whom they laid their trust as they left their first and primary mission, then I fully suspect that someone or some group is going to file a major shareholder derivative action in an effort to bring accountability back to the businesses that went astray. It may actually be, you know, somewhat of a 21st century version of legally storming the Bastille. So my advice to the ESG companies, remember what you were founded on to actually do. You have one job, and it's time for you to get back to business. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yet boggles my mind how they can believe that they're doing what they were designed to do. If you're designed to manage investments, that would certainly mean a profit, right? Unless, of course, you work for BlackRock, in case there you want to make sure you maximize stakeholders in the world, not shareholders in your portfolio. Same with banking. And then same with, you know, too many politicians that bought into the notion that, hey, let's be more woke. Green policy, big government, lots of social justice. Yeah, how about get back to business? There's an idea. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. That's just good. And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, with Boomer putting on the best bumps in radio. Man, and I love that where he goes, have mercy. That's one of my favorite parts of a song like that, where to have mercy. And then there's what's the one, Flirting with Disaster by Molly Hatchet, where in the background, all of a sudden, he goes, it ain't for everybody. Yes. all right. Hey, listen, we got all kinds of stuff laid on for you right now. Let me talk through a couple of pieces of breaking news just to make sure you're aware. And this is just truly just breaking news in no particular order. First of all, there has been an active shooter event at a Denver high school, so Denver, Colorado. Two adults injured, I believe. If I got my story straight, but no deaths that we know of. But the shooter is still on the loose, and so apparently the person fired the shots and then vacated the premises. And police are on the hunt for that individual right now. We're just thankful to hear that there were no deaths on scene, at least not that we've seen or confirmed now to this point. There's that story. The next one is, so the whole Trump grand jury thing just continues to, who knows?
Who knows?
Moving target.
Just keeps going.
That's just, what you got to do.
What do you feel like? New day, new story.
Yeah, well, the new story is right now, the grand jury, which was coming in today with the belief that they may be finished up and moving towards, a call to determine whether there's an indictment or not, it was canceled today. And by the way, do not think that means they've been adjourned. The grand jury has not been dismissed. It's coming back in. But for some reason we don't know, which could have been as simple as somebody got COVID or something. Who knows? All that to say, something happened today, and the grand jury meeting that was supposed to take place on the DA of Manhattan's efforts to indict Trump on a heinous misdemeanor has been canceled. So there's that one. And then the other one that just broke is that the Fed has decided to raise the rate again. So another quarter point. I'm all over the board. I got active shooters. I got President Trump and I got the Fed. But yeah, all three breaking news just in the last hour. In fact, Boomer, how prescient is that? So I'm looking up the screen and there's Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell making his speech, his pitch for why it was necessary to raise another quarter point.
Wow.
Just dang. Wow. Mm. Now, you know, they can't keep it down at zero like they did for the last 10 years and flood the market with capital. But what we're looking at now, though, is everything comes off of that Fed interest rate, you know, and they keep raising it. They're trying to quell inflation. But then again, it gets to this balancing act of when are you quelling inflation and when are you making things worse? So some would say in housing markets and new starts and in new construction, that the Fed rate is really starting to hurt those markets. And those are indicators of a thriving economy. So at some point you got to look at, okay, I mean, supposedly they're smart people, but then again, they presided over a lot of mess. So who knows how smart they really are. But nonetheless, I didn't sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but it feels to me like it's about time to stop raising the rates and start letting the market normalize and stabilize. Just me saying.
I think so.
I'm there. All right. We got text lines are already open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. We're going to be talking about school choice. We're going to be talking about, you know, virtue signaling from a corporation standpoint. And we're going to be talking about ESG. And we got the Grand Council. And I've already got one detractor. So this text never makes sense to me. I think he may have called in on this one time. But Scott from Huntsville is of the mind, and this is the most just unbelievably convoluted level of thinking. He says, Phil, it's very dishonest for you to push the socialist school subsidy bill when it's not publicly published. Stop pushing socialism and then running spots saying that socialism is bad. I have no idea what he's talking about. The idea that, so let me get this straight. Because right now, socialism says government knows how best to spend the money. The Price Act, which we have seen the premise of it, not necessarily the final version of the legislation, clearly states that, no, it's not about funding government, it's about funding kids' educations and parents having a say in how that works. And we're going to give you the money back to do that with, which therefore decentralizes control away from the central government, which is the tenet of socialism. And yet Scott says, Scott, I got to ask, just text me and let me know. Are you a member of the AEA? I'd just like to know. And if you're not, then please explain how you believe, without giving me a 15-paragraph text, how you believe that this is socialism. Tyler from Huntsville has texted and said that shooting in Denver happened this morning. Two administrators shot, one in serious condition, the other critical in surgery. And the kid that shot, I guess they're saying that it was a kid that was a shooter, was a student that was required to be searched every day for safety concerns. If you got a kid that has to be searched every day, like a special search this one, maybe he shouldn't be in the school to begin with. All right. Wow. And then Brian from Huntsville said the Federal Reserve is an active shooter. Wow. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. I'm talking about this show covers some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That'd be Alabama. From way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. So Scott heard me, apparently, Boomer.
Yeah. Oh, so, he did.
Yeah, I'm not a conservative, he says.
He's not a conservative?
He says, I'm a conservative, you're not. Disingenuous to suggest that I'm AEA. Taking money from one group and redistributing it to another is socialism. I'll send you an email explaining to you what socialism is. What the heck is he talking? So let me make sure you understand, Scott. We're not taking money from one group and sending it to another. We're decentralizing control, which is where the school systems, which are part of the government, are currently. And we're allowing people to keep their own money to put their kids in school somewhere else. And if you can't see that, if that's socialism to you, I'm just going to suggest that perhaps you might want to go back and study socialism. But that's okay. I'm not conservative because I believe in school choice. Wow. Jason from Huntsville. That's a long text, or Jason. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to read all that, brother. But he's talking about Jerome Powell, and I will read that during a break to make sure that I know what I'm reading before I try to read it on the air. Jim from Huntsville says, I heard a report that suggested the Trump grand jury was dismissed today because of the discovery that Bragg, DA Alvin Bragg, was actually or potentially withholding exculpatory evidence, potentially reams of it. You know what? I'm not going to be surprised. Not a bit. And for those who don't know, exculpatory evidence, this means they're supposed to, by law, and here's part of that January 6th thing that just irritates the stew out of me. By law, they are supposed to provide you copies of anything they've got, whether it helps or hurts their prosecution. Meaning, if there's something in there that actually helps you as a defendant, that's called exculpatory evidence. That might actually help prove your innocence or at the very least mitigate their claims against you. And they're supposed to provide that. And if they've been holding back on stuff in order to try and make their claim in front of the grand jury, I mean, the old saying is you can indict a ham sandwich with a grand jury. I mean, you can go in there and there's a lot more leeway in front of a grand jury than there is in front of an actual judge. You can get in there and kind of steer the questions. And I don't mean like artfully ask your questions in the right order. I'm talking about push people to a decision more so in a grand jury than you ever can in front of an actual jury or in front of a judge, where the procedure is, the rules of criminal and civil procedure directly apply, and you can object and you can preserve those objections on the record for appeal. So yeah, all said and done, we'll see. That's going to be interesting. All right, let me jump in there to the first part, and I'll just spend the next half hour angering Scott from Huntsville. Yeah, grab my notes. So Save Our Schools, SOS, Save Our Schools, first part of the Triple Dipper. So my belief is this. You will not see a better bill come to the Alabama legislature for school choice than the one that is currently coming up right now. It's called the Price Act. It stands for Parental Rights in Children's Education Act. And you remember we had, how long has it been, Boomer? About 2 weeks since we had Senator Stutz on here?
I believe so.
Yeah, he was talking about his efforts to bring this bill up. So previous champions in the House and Senate in Alabama were Representative Charlotte Meadows, who hails from down towards the Pike Road area and then near Montgomery. And then in the Senate, it was Senator Del Marsh. They're both gone now. Senator Marsh retired. Representative Meadows pretty much got hosed. And she was basically thrown to the wolves, in my opinion, by her own leadership, which is still chafes me. More on that another time. But the new champions right now appear to be State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, who's going to carry this price act in the House, and State Senator Larry Stutz, who, and by the way, those are both North Alabama guys. Let's see, I'm trying to think. Ernie Yarbrough is from the Trinity area, I believe, and Senator Stutz, I believe, is from up around Haleyville, that area. Yeah, close. Northwest Alabama, both of them. So the deal is this. And here's Senator Stutz's words from an article that I pulled off of AL.com. He says, number one, it's the parent's responsibility to determine what is best for their child. Hence the name, the Parental Rights and Children's Education Act. And then number two, the money ought to follow the child. And then number three point, he says, if you don't want to participate, you don't have to participate. So the way this bill works is this. It creates what's called an ESA. An ESA is an education savings account that is basically set aside in your child's name. You don't have to do it. I mean, you may wake up in your zip code every morning content with the school that is there, and your child just goes to school, and you're fine. You know, and there are some great schools. There's some great public schools. I'm a product of the public schools. I had some good ones and bad ones in my life. But all said and done, you may be content with the zip code version of education for your child, and that might be the best decision. But guess what? It's your decision. However, you may be one of those parents or guardians who wakes up in the morning just frustrated that you can't move, you can't afford to move, or maybe your job doesn't let you move, or there's some aspect of where you live that you just, there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. You know, maybe the family farm is co-located with that zip code, whatever. And now you're stuck with a school that is just not meeting your child's needs. And it can be for education, or it might be meeting their needs because of, you know, some bullying, or maybe there's, you know, some aspect of, you know, the social nature of the school that you just want to move or move your child. Well, this bill will allow you to say, you know what, here I am, John and Jane Doe, we want to move our child to that school down the road, and we want to send them to a private school, or we want to send them to, you know, a church school, or we want to whatever, doesn't matter. You're allowed to move, and the money follows the child. Because here's the deal, man. I've said it so many times on this show. The reality is, if you are of the belief that the way to handle this is to let the system be the sole source of determining what is right for your child, then you're a big government person. If you're of the mind that the funds that are paid by individual taxpayers into the system are there to fund the system, then you are never going to agree with school choice. But if you believe that those taxpayer dollars are going in to the bank, the state coffers, for the purpose of educating the child, then you should not even care where that is, as long as it's where the parents and legal guardians determine was best to get an education for their child. So, like, I've got this article right here, and I quote, State Superintendent Eric Mackey says he has not yet seen the bill, but he said the position he took on last year's legislation has not changed, because it did come up last year and didn't move. If non-public schools, he said, are to receive tax money, those schools should be required to participate in the testing programs used in public schools. And Mackey said the state could pay to administer the tests in the private schools. How about no? How about no? That may not always be the test. We've not been the best state at standardized testing. How about the idea might be, are the parents satisfied the child is getting an education? And secondarily, is the child getting an education? And third, is there a certification or validation process already in place for that school? Are they board certified? Are they a school that is meeting the mark with graduation rates? How about this? Do they have a higher percentage of their student body per capita that gets national merit semifinalist or finalist categories? Those kind of things matter coming in to do standardized testing. If you were so good at standardized testing, perhaps the school systems might be in a better place. But then even more so, I look at the comments delivered by Sally Smith, who is the executive director of the Alabama Association of School Boards. That's basically the lobbying entity for the school boards. They have concerns about specific parts of the bill, but they also oppose the concept upon which it's based. Okay. Using taxpayer dollars to pay for private school. See, that's the point. They believe the dollars are there for the system, not for the child. And then she goes on to make this ridiculous statement. Maddening, actually. This basically amounts, she says, to a middle-class entitlement program. Under this program, you'll have parents who have elected and can pay for their child to go to private schools, then getting money from the state coffers to send their children to elite summer camps or specialized foreign language schools at state expense because of the very, very liberal interpretations of the law. No, Sally, how about this? People who are of lower income will now have the ability to do what those with higher income have been able to do all along. People who can't afford to send their kids to a private school will now have that option for the first time. And how about this? Elite summer camps and specialized foreign language schools are not what's considered in the bill. And oh, by the way, let's do this. Let the parents make the choice, and you, Sally Smith, are not an elected official, so go do your lobbying. But the reality is, this ain't going to fly. That's the silliest, most inane argument. All you're doing is helping the rich. No, truthfully, if you look at school choice around the nation, you'll find that the people who benefit the most are those from the lower income stratus who now have an opportunity to do something they never could have done, ever, because they pay taxes too. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Boomer, go ahead and take a break, brother. We're going to go take the break right now. We'll come back and take the break about a minute early so I have some time when I get back to unpack this a little bit more. Universal school choice. It's happening in other states, multiple states. And then on top of that, I got some stuff about what it takes for parents to begin fighting back. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Well, by the way, you're going to want to stay tuned because top of the hour, in this same vein, talking about school choice and saving our schools, you know, it's not just a matter of legislation. If you think that if you're concerned about education, if you believe in the idea of school choice or about reforming the fact that Alabama has remained down at the bottom of the heap for years and years, if you think it's about money, you're wrong because we have raised the education budget consistently year over year for the last decade at the same time we dropped lower in the polls. Think about it. So apparently it's not about how much money, it's about what we do with the money. And then on top of that, you can take a look at the fact that there's a number of states. I want to say last time I checked the listing, there was like 8 to 10 states that spend less per child than Alabama does and rank higher in the rankings. So that seems to indicate that it, again, is not about what we spend, it's about how we spend it. All that to say, there's multiple states right now that are passing major school choice measures. Governor Ivey is of the mind that we just sort of sit tight and do a little bit more about the, you know, the thing that we've kind of already been doing. Charter schools, you know, do a little more charter schools. Or for that matter, maybe we do a little bit more on the, you know, the whole notion of the Alabama Accountability Act, which is great. I love the Accountability Act. I was proud to be there and we fought to get it. But maybe, just maybe, those haven't been enough and it's time to do more. So, yeah, I'm of the firm belief that it's time to get out there. And, oh, listen, here's an idea. Let's lead. There's a novel idea. Let's get out front and say, I see a better way. Follow me, Alabama. Republican supermajority. And yet, you know, the weirdness that we've got in Alabama is that on some matters, we have a red, the deepest red of politics running purple as it passes certain types of legislation and ignores others. Weird. But there it is. So, here's the thing. The other piece, though, that's got to have to happen is parents and community leaders and members of the community and just concerned citizens in general got to get active. I got a piece right here. I watched an interview on, I think it was Tucker Carlson, actually, a guy named Ian Pryor. He's coming out with a new book called Parents of the World Unite, How to Save Our Schools from the Left's Radical Agenda. And he talks about how he helped with the fight in Loudoun County, Virginia, the same thing that not only changed, well, this is still going, but not only changed some of what was happening in that school system, but many believe it's part of what propelled Republican Glenn Youngkin to the governorship and has really had an impact on their state politics. It was parents getting involved. And right now, by the way, this week, there's apparently something, and I need to check into this, in Congress, House Bill 5, being debated in the House of Representatives. It's called the Parents' Bill of Rights. It would provide greater transparency in public schools. It gives parents statutory rights alongside their constitutional rights about upbringing of their children. I mean, I got to check it out because I get a little concerned when I hear that Congress is taking action on schools, which are a state issue, but I still want to find out what that's about. But this guy, Ian Pryor, wrote this book, right? Parents of the World Unite, How to Save Our School from the Left's Radical Agenda. I've already reached out trying to see if I can get him on the show. But he says there's 12 strategic rules that parents, and I would say citizens, need to employ. He said one of the first ones is you need to recognize that every neighborhood is a battlefield. In other words, don't think about it. Well, it's down there in Montgomery. It's too big for me. No, it's right there in your neighborhood. It's in your zip code. If you don't like the school system in your neighborhood, you don't go to Montgomery to fix it. You can, in a way, but what you really do is you look at your school board. You look at what's going on in your schools. You look at whether or not you can get involved. And, you know, the PTAs, they'll also allow adjunct members, people who can come in and, you know, provide donations and do things and help raise money for their local school efforts and, oh, by the way, be tutors and do all they can to raise the level. So every neighborhood is a battlefield, number one. And then he also has several things like activate, investigate, and communicate. What he's basically saying is don't be afraid to be a private investigator. You find out that something weird's going on in that school. You find out that teachers are bragging on TikTok that they're helping, you know, kids change their pronouns without telling the parents. Guess what? You can see something, say something. You know what I mean? And then he says, always flip the script. This is interesting. He says, with a combination of fearlessness and humorous mockery, parents can punch through the far left's most potent psychological tool, which is the fear of cancel culture, and bring the fight back to the bullies. What he's saying is this. You want to go down that road? You want to dare to threaten my business because I spoke out about it? I'm here for you. And when they see that you're not scared, and when they see that, oh, by the way, the community is going to rally around you for taking a stand for the community, the bullies begin to back down. They also, he has a number of things in here. He talks about making it public. Don't be afraid of that. Go, you know, call the press to the next meeting because you're going to be there to protest, or at the very least, you're putting yourself on the speaker's list. It doesn't mean, by the way, that everything has to be about screaming and yelling and making a scene. Not at all. It can just be that 10 parents said, you know what, I'm going down. Let's go put our name on the speaker list and take 2 minutes and just, you know, tell them how we feel. Do it. Start there. They talk about things like don't let them off the ropes. Play the end game, which means, by the way, always keep in mind what the goal is. He says the end game was started as your primary goal. It can be subsumed into something much greater than you could have ever imagined it, but when it comes time to shift to that greater purpose, let your opponents distract themselves with what they think while you silently redeploy your efforts to stay focused on your final victory. Speaking in very general terms here, but I'm looking forward to getting a copy of this book. And like I said, I'm going to try and get this guy, Ian Pryor, on the show. In the meantime, do know this. That's already coming home. We're about to have a call in here from a friend of mine, former Alabama Republican Party chairwoman, Terry Lathan. She just started an organization called ROAM, R-O-A-M. It stands for Republicans on a Mission. And she says that basically she had a knee surgery. She was laying there thinking a lot, got bored, and decided to, you know what? I got to find something. And she used to be a school teacher. And, oh, by the way, she was party chair for the state Republican Party for like 8 years. And she said she's seen other states change their policies and allow school choice, and she does not know why Alabama can't do that. So as a former educator herself, she says she's tired of seeing kids locked in by their zip code. And so she has over 200 members already that are committing to go to Montgomery and contact lawmakers and do what it takes to try and get the PRICE Act, the Parents' Rights in Children's Education Act passed. Well, I love this. So y'all stay tuned. We'll take a call here momentarily from former Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan about Republicans on a mission for school choice. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. So we're in number one of today's Triple Dipper. I'm calling it SOS, Save Our Schools. And we talked about the Price Act, which is ongoing or just coming into play down in Montgomery. State Senator Stutz and State Representative Ernie Yarbrough are the two sponsors of the legislation. It's the sort of landmark piece of school choice legislation, but it's not like Alabama is the first to do this. Multiple states are already, you know, already doing this. And doing it effectively, apparently. But someone who's, you know, got a notion to get active on the issue is a friend of mine, former chairwoman of the Alabama Republican Party, Terry Lathan, hails from down the Mobile way, and she has just organized a new group called ROME, which stands for Republicans on a Mission. So without further ado, Madam Chair, how you doing?
I am doing great. And thank you for the opportunity. I love being on a show that talks about being on the right side because I am convinced, and I believe millions more, and parents are as well. And the data shows it, the polling shows it, the legislatures across the nation are showing it, that it's the right time for parental school choice. And Alabama needs to lead the way, and I am so excited to be a part of this.
Well, I must say, you come from the perspective of having been a teacher yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. I was in a classroom, fifth and sixth grade. I miss my classroom. I'm just in a different classroom these days, Phil. Still trying to help our little ones. I wanted to be a school teacher when I was 6 years old. And I don't know how many people out there listening said, I want to be a fill-in-the-blank at 6 years old and really did that thing. But I was that person, and I love children, and I love being in the classroom. I love teachers. I love my peers. I love people in education. But we can love them, but we can love parents, too. Yeah. And we can love parents' choices because parents love their children the most. And we can also love our system where we pay 100% of the taxes in education. Government doesn't make money, doesn't produce money. It disseminates the money, and it comes from all of us. All three revenue streams, federal, state, and local, pay 100% of education taxes. So there is a movement, as you mentioned, across this nation, and actually in the state of Alabama, and to simply let the parents' money follow their child if they want to move. I think most students probably won't move if they had the opportunity. They love their schools, and that's great. But give the parents the opportunity who maybe aren't in the best areas and are defined by zip codes. Why in the world should our government education system be defined by your zip code?
It really makes no sense. I mean, I guess it could make sense back in the day when we were a less mobile society. I mean, back in the day where you pretty much did everything within a small niche area and your zip code, I guess I get it. But we are not there anymore. In fact, employment is not even there anymore. Shopping is not there anymore. You know, everything else that we do in our day-to-day lives is not there anymore. Your hospital is not there anymore. You've got any number of things you do that is mobile, and yet you're not allowed to be mobile for his education.
Everything in life now. And like, you can eat online education. I talked to a teacher the other day. She said she just got her master's. I said, that's great. Where'd you get it? She went online. And so even in the education field, things aren't the same.
Yeah.
But the beauty of this bill that's about to be dropped, called PRICE, P-R-I-C-E, in Montgomery, is it just simply says, as a parent, please let me take my money, my state dollars, and move them with my child to the school of my choice. We do everything else in life for our children, from the time they're born to the time they leave. And gosh, even mine as adults, and probably yours going into adulthood, we're always there with them, wanting the best. But why in the world should the government stop us from doing this? There is no greater freedom, Phil. You know this. You're a man of freedom. You fought for our freedom. There is no greater freedom than for a family to be able to take the money that they chip in to the government and move that money with their child if they want to.
Absolutely. Well, I totally agree. And I tell you what, let's do this. I want to. You've made the case for school choice, and we might come back to the Price Act here in just a minute. But before we run out of time, I want to just kind of chat with you about this new organization you're putting together, what the genesis of it is, how you're using it, and how it's employing.
Yeah, so I, as I've shared publicly not long ago, this past fall, I had my second knee replaced. And I don't know if it was God or boredom or if he used my boredom, but I just have this strong passion that came to me and thought, I have to do something, but I can't do it by myself. And I, with school choice and school is my background, and also working in the Republican Party and the Party of Freedom with our party platform of school choice, it just came to me that we need to organize in our state, the Republicans and or just parents, to come together. And I put a program together and named it ROAM, R-O-A-M, Republicans on a Mission. And we're simply a volunteer group who will sign up, and if called upon, will you go to Montgomery with us to a committee hearing? Will you talk to your legislators? Will you email them when directed? And my goal was to have 100 people that we could move together to start with. I'm about to surpass 200.
Wow, nice.
When people hear about it, these are get in your car and go people. And the party has done a fantastic job of getting good Republicans elected in our state. They've done, and our legislators have done incredible things for our state, so much better than when the Democrats were in control. But this one issue we're missing out on.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that everyone pulls a chair up to this table. So ROAM is an organization. It is authorized also by the Alabama Republican Party. They're all in. And we're simply looking for volunteers to go, you know what, I could go to a committee hearing, or I could call my five people if you tell me. And that's what ROAM is, volunteer organization.
And I'll tell you, too, from my own experience in the state Senate is that, you know, there were times when a lobbyist might give me information I didn't have before, and I get it. But for the most part, lobbyists were not what swayed me. I might get the 150,000 emails that all look exactly the same, and they were just, you know, substitute the name here. After a while, you can't keep reading those. They don't mean anything. What got me every time was when a topic that I was gray on, because, you know, you come down there with certain principles like, you know, pro-life, you can't move me on that. But when it comes to something that I was not as familiar with, like, say, economic development or something else, a constituent from back home who would actually appear in the state house or call me on the phone and have a discourse about it, that was the game changer sometimes for me to help me understand the impact of the legislation. And I think if you get a rally going, of a good number of people, some of whom are actually involved in the party and back home for these legislators, you can move the needle.
Well, we got to try. It was Michael Jordan that said, "You miss every shot you don't take."
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's just time for us to try. You have to start somewhere. Now, here's the great news. Many of our legislators in the House and Senate are open to this discussion. They want to see a bill, and they'll do that. You know, you were there. You got us. Words mean things, especially
right.
in legal matters. And that's fine. So the price bill is about to drop, and I'm looking for volunteers to go with me, to go with us in Montgomery, to Montgomery. Or if you can't go, here's five people. Would you call these five people and say we really want parental school choice in our state? All of us have a seat at this table. Anyone listening right now, if you don't have children in the system anymore, the public or government school, you're paying the taxes for it.
That's right. You can
if
still
you have
care.
Grandparents, you're paying the taxes for it, and so you have a seat at the table. It's not, oh, I've already done that, or my kids aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
But your money is.
Yeah, and your money is. Oh, by the way,
important.
It's also this is your house. This is your state. I mean, this is your community, and you can still
yes.
care. In fact, the vast number of people, who are involved in politics don't ever run for office, but they still care. And the same would be true about this issue. So let me ask you this, Terry. We got about a minute and a half.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to get involved in Rome and help you with this issue, how do they do it?
Send us an email, easy peasy. Rome, R-O-A-M, for Alabama, at gmail.com. That's R-O-A-M, for F-O-R. Alabama, spelled out, at gmail.com. RomeForAlabama at gmail.com.
Outstanding.
We'll sign you up, and if you can go, come with us. If you can't, call with us. And let's reach out to our good Republicans in Montgomery and say, all polling and all data shows the way the Republicans want school choice passed in our state.
Yeah, I think that's huge, and this has got to happen. And I just really appreciate the fact that you not only have always been a leader in our state and fighting for conservative issues, but I'm just glad that you didn't retire and fade off into the distance here. You literally got an anger. What'd you say on the phone for me earlier? You said you got a bee under your bonnet and a burden on your back. Is that what you said?
Yes, I did. I do. I'm trying to retire, but you know, maybe I just.
When
you love something or so bad, you can't just turn it off and just stop. I love children. I can't turn it off. It's like I love my family, even though my kids are grown. I can't turn it off, and I think most people can understand that. And so I'm asking everyone to help this be the legacy in the state of Alabama and stop letting other states lap us in parental school choice. The only thing should be lapping in this state is the cars at Talladega. Other than that, we need parental school choice. And I ask everyone to join us, ROAM for Alabama at gmail.com.
All right. Well, my friend Terry Lathan, former chair of the Alabama Republican Party and an activist from way back, we appreciate your time. And we'll keep track of this, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon to talk about the progress.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Take care. All right, I tell you what, perfect segue. Boomer, go ahead and take the break. We'll come right back, put a lid on this one, and we're moving into the next part of the Triple Dipper. I'll be talking about virtue failing. You know, it's amazing to me. Virtue signaling is a thing you hear about. What's crazy is when some of them get into virtue signaling and it's a total fail, we might as well just call it virtue failing. That's where we're at. We're talking about it coming up soon. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world, one soundbite at a time. Let me jump over here. I got a text from Michelle from Huntsville. All right, so Michelle, I'm going to read the text first. She goes, how is this bill going to address CRT, SEL, and DEI? So you got CRT, critical race theory, you got SEL, social emotional learning, and you got DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, all problems. She goes, how's this bill going to address CRT, SEL, and DEI? That is the real problem, and teachers not being held accountable to actually teach. How is allowing a few kids to move schools going to change this? I'm all for money following a kid, but these things must, all caps, be addressed. Don't create more government bureaucracy. Just give a tax credit for people not using government schools. Okay, first of all, apples and oranges. Not entirely, but follow me here. We have to address CRT, SEL, and DEI. I agree completely. And that's probably going to be a piece of separate legislation. So what we're doing right now is saying, first of all, if you're in a school or a system for that matter, where you believe that CRT is being employed in your child's classroom, or that social emotional learning is being deployed in your child's classroom, or that diversity, equity, inclusion is allowing your child or other children in your classroom to, you know, change their pronouns and do all that. If you believe those kind of things are happening, then one of the first things you want is the freedom to get out of there. So I would say that, so Michelle, I agree with you. Those things have to be addressed. And she also says, and teachers not being held accountable. Well, that's another piece of legislation. And by the way, don't let the perfect just destroy the opportunity for the good. If you don't see something in this bill that you like, call your legislator and work the issue. But at the same time, if you believe that the number one issue is dealing with CRT, okay, let's get a bill out there to deal with CRT in schools, which, by the way, we've been dealing with over the last few years, and various things have happened with the school board, some of which have been effective and some not. But all said and done, don't say that it's not important to let parents have a way to get their kids out of that bad school. No, it's very important. It might be the most controlling factor. Because at that point, you're saying the most important thing is that the child's best interest is literally considered, and the parents have a right to determine what that is, not the system. And then, oh, by the way, get another bill out there that says, ain't no CRT, SEL, and DEI allowed in our schools. And like here's one of the quickest ways you do that. Like, I was shocked to find out recently, this is not a school, but the mayor of Gadsden is screaming about occupational taxes and losing revenue. And yet he just hired a DEI coordinator with a max salary of around $100,000 a year. Okay, here's a way you can figure out whether DEI is being used in your child's classroom. Does your school board have a DEI coordinator or director on staff? If they do, then that's a local issue. Go find out why the heck. Get it out of there. Tell them that position is not necessary. We want someone who's going to actually pick a good curriculum and supply it down to the classrooms and let it be taught by good teachers who are qualified to do it. But in the meantime, don't think for a second, and I'm not just calling out Michelle here, it's anybody. Don't just think for a second that we can't do both. You need to do both. You need to have legislation out there that says, get the wokeness out of our schools. And oh, by the way, have legislation out there that says, and parents are allowed to take their kids to where it is best to take them. That's not rocket science. That's walking and chewing gum at the same time. We can do it. We can do it. And you know what may happen? You may get both bills out there, good bills, and then one of them passes, the other doesn't. Guess what? You come back the next year, you bring that other bill back up, and you keep moving. Some of the best legislation I saw took 2 and 3 or 4 years to pass. Unfortunately, some of the worst bills I saw took 2 and 3 or 4 years to pass. But all that to say, legislation is not a one-session issue. You got to be in it for the long haul, man. And school choice, we've been in it for the long haul. I was there the night we passed the Accountability Act. Not the best, but it was good. And you know, if we had waited around till the perfect happened, Alabama would still be doing absolutely zero on school choice. At least we have something, and we're going to make it better. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer. This topic today is on the idea of saving our schools, with choice being the key focus here. Choice and, I would say, activism. But if you believe that the number one issue is CRT, SEL, and DEI, then go for it. Go for it, man. And you can probably work with Terry Lathan on that too. But in the meantime, don't go shooting down good legislation because you don't have your perfect legislation. Sometimes the camel's got to get his nose under the tent. And I don't mean give up the farm or have bad ideas. What I'm saying is this. Don't stop doing good stuff because somebody didn't have the perfect stuff. That's important. All right, coming right back, we're switching gears. Next in the Triple Dipper, the virtue failings. What happens when corporations just get so woke, they lose sight? Next thing you know, it backfires. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about this show goes way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back on over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi. Thrown in just for good measure. All right, I'm switching gears now. Number two, I'm going to get it done. I'm gonna get this segment done.
Oh, finally!
Yeah. Well, we'll see how far it goes. But so I've had this on my desk the last couple of days and didn't get to it a few days ago. Didn't get to it the next day because the news was going wild about like the Trump indictment, some potential indictment, and stuff like that. And so it just kept getting shelved. But it was one of those that was, it wasn't time sensitive. It was just a good topic. And I kept thinking, I'm going to hang on to it. All right. I did. And I hung on to it to today. I'm not going to keep hanging on to it. I'm going to go for it. So number two of the Triple Dipper, I'm calling it virtue failing. So you hear about virtue signaling all the time. And virtue signaling, if you're not familiar, is just a euphemistic title given to the idea that, you know, when people or corporations or whatever start getting out there and making sure that you know how they feel, like almost unsolicited. By the way, we don't like racism. Oh, good. And nobody does. And by the way, we support LGBTQ agendas. I didn't ask, but thanks for sharing. That's called virtue signaling. That's them signaling to the world that they are so on board with your causes. They just want everybody to know. That it's just like, wow, here we are. Don't you know what we stand for? It's sort of like my opening monologue. Just get back to business, please. I mean, at some point, when is corporate America going to realize that if they want to do a thing that they believe in, go do the thing you believe in, but don't do it at the sacrifice of your own standing as a corporation that's supposed to do other things. Like, you know, Coca-Cola, what's your job? Make soft drinks. Or how about... oh gosh, what was the which one of the airlines? American Airlines? Was it Delta? Delta Airlines. Delta Airlines coming out hard on that legislation in Georgia that just basically said you got to have a voter ID. Why would they do that? They're just kicking the state that they've been living in now for a number of years. By the way, it was all proven, much to their chagrin later on, that it wasn't true. Just amazing. So these are virtue fails. So what happens when they get out there and they just virtue fail? Like, you know, we support Black Lives Matter. Really? Did you support them when they burned down those buildings? Because I'm pulling my money out of your bank. How do you like me now? It's just, that's what happens right now. And granted, they might signal to some. I mean, how much did Gillette lose when they came up with the idea? By the way, what are razors for? I quiz you, Boomer. Are you ready? Here we go.
I'm ready. Here we go.
All right. First question. What are razors for?
To shave.
Hey. All right. So far, you're batting 1,000.
Yes.
Who does the most shaving, men or women? Generally speaking. careful.
I'm going to go with men.
Okay. Got it. I'm with you. All right. All right. We don't shave our legs or anything, but nonetheless, no. Well, generally speaking. Okay. But So Gillette came out with this thing a few years ago, and it was basically it was a pushback against masculinity. I'm thinking, so let me get this straight. Your target audience is largely speaking men who shave, but your goal in your advertising is to talk about toxic masculinity and they had one commercial with a guy helping his young transgender son shave closer so he would look more female. And I'm thinking, just friggin' no. I have yet to use a Gillette razor since that time.
Yeah.
I take it back. I probably burned through my remaining, you know, disposable blades.
The rest of them.
And I'm sitting there with Schick now. Thank you very much. but it just, you look at it and go, man, it's such a, that was so unnecessary. That's not your product line. And, you know, you heard all about Coca-Cola being Woca-Cola. it just make your soft drinks.
Yeah, just stay in your lane.
Thank you.
There you go.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
You had one job.
You have one job. Just do that. You don't have to get into anything else.
I don't care, I guess, if a corporation believes that they want to get behind something and make it their cause, that's certainly their right. They can do that. In the eyes of the law, a corporation is an entity with standing much like a person would have. And you actually may have to designate a corporate rep to stand in front of the judge, but the corporation is the one that's technically standing. So all that to say, corporations can do what they want to do, but at some point they might want to recognize that all these virtue signalings can become virtue failings when you get out over your skis and forget who it is you're supposed to serve and what it is you're supposed to do. So there's an article here from Fox, came out earlier this month, and it's... I like the title. It says, "These businesses are now where woke goes to die." So one of the means by which you can tell there's been a lot of virtue signaling going on in corporate America is how many people got high-paying jobs in DEI. What do you do? Well, I'm the diversity, equity, and inclusion coordinator for Corporation X. Wow, what do you do? Well, I make sure everybody knows how much it sucks to live in America. and my job daily is to remind them that they don't want to keep it sucking. Okay, what does that mean? Well, I tell them they're systemically racist, and I ask them to basically shame themselves into abandoning their privilege. Really, and that makes a non-toxic work environment, huh? So there's a scene. The article points out. I don't know if you ever seen the movie Office Space. Boomer, you ever seen the movie Office Space?
Yes, I have.
I love that movie. It's one of those that's maddening to watch. But you still look at it. There's so many one-liners in that. In fact, every time I find myself walking down the hall at the law firm with a coffee mug in my hand, I feel like I should be going, yeah, did you get the memo? Yeah. And when I had a job a while back, and they gave me a red swing line stapler, and I thought, what does this mean? Am I going to the basement now? What's happening?
What's going on?
What's going on, Bob? Did you get the memo? Yeah. We're going to make a change. Yeah. Anyway, there's an iconic scene in the movie Office Space in which the two guys, the Bobs, are conducting layoffs. And they ask one employee, what would you say you do here? Well, that's the question being asked right now, it says in this article, of diversity, equity, and inclusion departments at major corporations these days. And frankly, the answers are found wanting. And it goes on to point out, for the last 10 years, DEI departments have been growing. They've been becoming a part of American corporate culture. It's all about the virtue signaling. But now what we're going to see is some are recognizing in a tight fiscal environment that perhaps they don't need that baggage anymore. Maybe the guy or the chick whose job it is to come in and tell us what miserable cretins we are can just go pound sand and find another job. So it says here in the article, major firms like Target, Capital One, and Amazon are cutting the cord on their offices of wokeness, and not a moment too soon. I love that. Target, by the way, is the one that was one of the first corporations out there to decide that they were going to allow transgender use of bathrooms. Remember that? Back in the day?
I remember that.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, but apparently they're deciding right now, you know, I don't think we actually need this DEI high-paid executive telling us what miserable people we are. And it says in here in the article, what exactly does a DEI department do? Well, on some level, these managers of progressive race ideology are their own reward. The mere fact of having such departments allows corporations to signal their virtue in a political climate in which white supremacy is supposedly everywhere. Viewed through another lens, DEI is like a form of reparations. It's like a kickback, a non-tax-deductible charity donation to grievance mongers. Grievance mongers. I'm going to remember that phrase. Grievance. Bunch of grievance mongers. It also, it says here, seems like the easiest job in the world. All you got to do is cut and paste a few, you know, key articles from Slate or Teen Vogue and have Ibram X. Kendi come and give a seminar and you're done. So what is to become of this industry, it says? Well, it's going away. It appears that corporate America is finally beginning to wake up and say, how about no more of this? So, yeah, I love the idea of DEI offices going away. Hey, before I go any further, let me stop here. I got a phone call. I'm just noticing, Boomer. I apologize. I did not realize. Is that Sparky? We haven't heard from Sparky in a while. Sparky, how you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm good. Great show, you and Boomer.
Thanks, man.
I was alarmed to hear that about Gillette. I am heartened to hear that these DEI offices are closing in different corporations around the world, because I don't care how much you want to pander to the lunatic fringe, and that's literally what the DEI nonsense is. At some point, you got to make money, and it's not greed. It's doing right by your stockholders, doing right by your employees, and, you know, somebody famous said it, but greed is not a bad thing. Ambition is not a bad thing, and achievement is a really good thing. So I pray for our next generation that most of this woke nonsense doesn't completely destroy their sense of desire for achievement and ambition, because we can't afford to have but so many millions of young men and women sitting at home complaining and crying and staring at their cell phones. We need achievers. We need the next generation of hard workers, and there's no room for woke in that equation.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, and when you hire people to help you run your business, and their job is to tell people how awful they are, it doesn't create the kind of environment that creates achievement, in my opinion.
Right.
All right. Go ahead.
I'll let you guys go. Great show.
No,
Great show.
Hey, Sparky. Hey, before you go, let me ask you: are you enjoying retirement?
I am, but I'm working like a dog. I tell you, it's I don't know how I got anything done when I was still going to the job full time. There's so much that constantly needs fixed, repaired, painted, replaced. Goodness.
All right, man. We're glad you called in today. We've missed you.
I'll call more often.
All right. See you, bud. All right. I tell you what, Boomer, perfect time. Let's go ahead and take the break right now. We'll come back, and I'll tell you, oh, man, you might be interested to know one of the things that was just so prevalent at Swiss Bank, which has now been downgraded. And how much money actually did that SVB bank in California spend on things like Black Lives Matter? Wow. So y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Coming up, by the way, in the next few minutes, top of the hour, we're going to switch over to the Grand Council. We do it every Wednesday with Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson and little old me. So y'all stay tuned for that one. Hey, by the way, I got to tell you before we go too much further, ZLA Solutions, man, those guys have been with us since this show started. They are a great sponsor, ZLA Solutions. And you can find their website, ZLA Solutions, at ZLAUSA.com. They do all kinds of things for businesses. They can help you with your quality control, your sorting and containment, your shipping and logistics, your warehousing. But their bread and butter is still staffing. They can put people in jobs together like nobody's business. And, I mean, they are doing an amazing amount of it. They had their biggest year ever. And so here's the thing. If you're looking for a job personally, you can go on their website. They got tons of jobs posted right now across Alabama and beyond. So yeah, ZLAUSA.com. Check out the jobs that are posted. But if you indeed are an employer looking to fill out the ranks of your workforce and you need people, doesn't matter whether you need onesies and twosies, special niche skills, you know, they can find them. They've got a major hiring right now going on for a high-tech opportunity with a new facility in Redstone Arsenal. And so they're looking for people right now for that one. And then they got any number of ways to help you fill out an entire shift of people if you need them. Recruiting, background checks, drug testing, all of it. Temporary or direct hire, doesn't matter. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And do me a favor, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio, which, by the way, they get told quite often. Thank you very much. So back on this topic, virtue failing. So I find it just amazing that you find corporations who, number one, the corporation begins to fail, and then you realize how much time they spent doing things that weren't necessary or spending money on things that did not go to their original mission. For instance, that Silicon Valley Bank, the SVB Bank, the one that collapsed just a couple of Fridays ago and created the huge bank scare, the one now getting a bailout, by the way, from the Biden administration. Silicon Valley Bank is on record as having given $73.5 million to Black Lives Matter and other social justice-related causes. Unbelievable. The story here was on Fox Business, came out March 14th. But it says, as first reported by The Federalist, the now-defunct bank, in the summer of 2020, when the nation was gripped by racial unrest, to increase its commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, began doing certain things like setting up, you know, their diversity criteria and bragging that two-thirds of the bank's workforce met the diversity criteria. And on top of that, the database from the conservative Claremont Institute shows they donated $73 million to groups, many of whom are related to the Black Lives Matter movement that was, you know, burning down buildings left and right at the time. But then you got, in the wake of the SVB disaster, you've got Credit Suisse. So Credit Suisse is a Swiss investment bank, and one of their lead executives has been spending an amazing amount of his time, I say his, he likes to be called she, her, and they. Non-binary, gender-fluid guy who they refer to him as, and it's not Mr. or Mrs., it's Mix, apparently, MX, Mix Pips Bunce. His profile picture has him dressed half as a woman and half as a man. Interesting. And spending a great deal of time being awarded things like being the business champion of women by the Financial Times. Well, Credit Suisse claims that 6,000 of its employees, because of his efforts, are active LGBTQ plus allies. Wonderful. They've also just been downgraded because of their they're so busy being woke and following DEI principles that they've forgotten their first true mission. Here's one for you. Story that just came out last week. Redstate.com. Kellogg's donated $91 million to Black Lives Matter and other liberal groups after it slashed employee benefits. So it slashed employee benefits to the extent, and I mean there were protests by members of the employee groups, but at the same time, they were donating millions and millions and millions of dollars to liberal far left groups like Black Lives Matter, and you look at it and go, was it that important to virtue signal that you chose to cut your employees' benefits, but yet you're going to give that much money to things like Black Lives Matter? What the heck? 18 corporations are on record as giving millions, groups like Amazon, Microsoft, Nabisco, Gatorade, Airbnb, Atlantic and Warner record labels, all to Black Lives Matter. And yet, talk about an epic virtue fail. Nobody said much of anything when the news broke that Black Lives Matter cannot, by the way, where did this go? But they cannot explain their finances. They can't say why they bought a $6 million mansion in Los Angeles secretly and awarded lucrative contracts to family members of the founder of BLM, Patrice Cullors, who had sole control over it, by the way. Patrice Cullors did. They granted $8 million to Black Lives Matter of Canada, who then turned around and bought a $6.3 million mansion in Toronto. And on top of that, they also paid an art company run by the father of Cullors' only child, $969,000, and they paid Culler's brother Paul $840,000 for, quote, professional security services, despite having nothing on his resume except being a graffiti artist. I'm just telling you. Where are the virtue signalers when the virtue fails begin to happen? Maybe if they spent more time focusing on, I don't know, making cereal, selling books, developing software, and making record labels, actually sell records. Do they sell records anymore? I'm just saying. It's been a virtue fail left and right. And I get it. If there's something you want to do, go do it. But $73 million after you cut your employee benefits? Man, does that seem right? I don't think so. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're coming right back with the Grand Council, Jeff Poor, Dale Jackson, and me. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. You Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios, man, for hour number three. We got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and yeah, like the dude just said, we cover down solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it is that time of the week. We have this thing we do on Wednesday afternoons at 4 o'clock. We call it the Grand Council. And it's where I get together with two of my brethren in talk radio who have been doing it longer than I have, and they bring a good deal to the conversation. We ping each other with questions. We just sort of see how we come out on them. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't. We still love each other when it's over. So let me just go ahead and I'll call the roll first of all. I'll start with Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile. Also the executive editor at 1819 News. Jeff Poor, is you here?
I am present.
You are indeed, and I appreciate it. Switching over to the guy who apparently just logged in. That'd be Dale Jackson from 770 AM, 92.5 FM, Cumulus Broadcasting up in Huntsville, and also writing for Yellowhammer News. Dale Jackson, are you here?
Oh, I've been here for like 2.5 hours. Just
so. Oh, wow. Go ahead and beat your boots. All right, so let's. I tell you what, I pronounce a quorum. Boomer, hit it.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Ta-da! All right. The Grand Council being convened, I will just go ahead and say, Dale Jackson, take the first question. What you got?
Well, I'll tell you this. I just need to know from you guys. Is it...
Did we lose him? Did he just drop off?
Oh, man.
God.
Is it possible?
Hang on.
I keep getting bumped off. Don't worry. I'm going to fight through this. Don't worry.
All right. Start your question again, dadgummit, and learn how to use your technology. What do you got?
Yeah, I'll try my best to make this thing connect. All right. So here's my question. Is it possible that Donald Trump will ever survive this relentless, nasty onslaught from Ron DeSantis, where he says things like, I might have done a little better than COVID and fired Fauci, and I'm not going to have any drama. Is it possible that Donald Trump can withstand these withering attacks, and his fans, will there be some sort of mass suicide if they continue?
Yeah. Jeff, you're first. What you got?
The Trump fan base is a pretty touchy group. So I you know, Trump himself, I am confident he'll survive that. Yeah, I'm more worried about Trump supporters. I think we need to be on the watch.
I just find that the temperature goes up way too quick. So So Trump can say anything he wants to about anybody, but when someone says something back about him, that ain't right. And I'll be honest with you, I envision this as Trump says something nasty in a mean tweet about one of his fellow Republicans at 3:30 in the morning, and then that person actually lashes back. I envision that Trump actually gets a kick out of it. I envision that he's like, that was a good one. They said that was pretty cool. But his followers never seem to allow that to happen. And so if it's got to be good for the goose and the gander. Dale, your question, what do you think?
I think you're giving Trump way too much credit to pretend that he likes this kind of stuff. Donald Trump's son wrote a book about these guys. It was called Triggered. And I think that Donald Trump Jr. has found himself to be triggered over this. I think you guys need to toughen up. You're up against somebody that might actually push back this time, and you're not going to like it, but don't act like big, giant babies about it.
And I will say, though, DeSantis was very coy. His you know, whereas Donald Trump kind of comes out with these, like, schoolyard kind of insults, I feel like DeSantis's were, like, kind of understated and coy and almost, like, under your skin before you realized they were there.
Yeah, and you know what else I really disliked about? They were, like, about issues and differences as opposed to the spelling of the man's name. What is he doing? He's going to call him Strump or something. That's the solid.
All right. Next question, Jeff. What do you got?
So I'm coming to you from today from the State House, actually. If you listen, you can hear in the background a faint Roger Smitherman filibustering.
Oh, nice.
Some appointment or something.
I'm having flashbacks.
Yeah, so... yeah, it's like PTSD or something.
Yeah.
But something brought to my attention, in Kay Ivey's budget proposal, the Education Trust Fund, $30 million for a water park in Montgomery. How do you guys feel about that?
Oh, I've not seen that. You're telling me that the education budget has $30 million for a freaking water park in Montgomery. Really?
Yeah, so they've been working on this for a while. And I guess surprise is with all of these things government does, they underbudgeted, underfunded, and now they're having to go with their palms out for money. And apparently it made it into the governor's budget proposal. So now we're going to blow it up at 18-19 News here shortly. But aren't we starting to lose a little confidence here in the governor with putting that nonsense in the education trust fund?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look at that; that's maddening. So here we are. We're like, I almost feel like, you know, Oliver Twist saying, "Please, sir, can we have some more?" Begging for some measurable tax relief, and yet all we're getting is, I saw this opportunity to bail out some people did a really bad job at the local level trying to build a freaking water park, and I'm going to pretend that's an education expense and tuck it away in the back corner of my budget. Yeah, I hope y'all blow that thing wide open, man. Dale?
Now, hold on one second. hold on.
Here we go. Dale wants a water park.
Is it possible that there are some STEM opportunities at this water park where you could possibly conduct some experiments and things of that nature?
The only stem is the bacteria growing in the splash pad after it's been there for 6 months.
I'm just trying to tell you that there's an opportunity here for education, and maybe we should just be a little more open-minded. Oh, my God, no, they've screwed this up. If they had some reasoning for it, they should have told everyone and not made somebody find it and show them. Yeah, this is a bad idea.
So, Jeff, fill in the blanks there. What else you know about it?
Well, I know that it's a Mayor Reed project here, and he's really been wanting to do it. But I would say this, Senator, this may be the first budget in a long time where the governor submits it to the legislature and they just throw it into trash and start from scratch.
Well, they should. I mean, she's got, what, umpteen million dollars more, like a 7% increase just for her own office, for the executive. I mean, I look at this and think, what is happening?
She has spent every penny. There's other things you're going to hit on in this thing. But holy cow, like the $30 million for a water park. Did we not learn our lesson from American Adventures over in West Jefferson County? Did we not learn our lesson from these things? And we're just doing the same silliness again.
Here's the other thing too, Jeff. In the not so distant past, we would have these horrible budgets with no surpluses, And the Education Trust Fund always had, you know, Alabama is one of those archaic states that still does split budgeting. Thank you, teachers union. But the education budget would be flush with cash, and yet the general fund had no money to do anything. But God forbid you should transfer dollars over from one budget to another. No, no, not real appropriation. You can't do that. And now they're going to spend money on a water park because they're so flush with cash that nobody cares. That's just unbelievable. And I hope the legislature rips this thing to pieces and starts over, like you said. All right.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking to me. This is toast.
Well, it needs to be toast. And it's almost as if Governor Ivey doesn't care. Or then again, maybe somebody else is doing their job for her. But the reality is, for that to come out of her office is just wrong. All right, let me jump on something here. You guys reported this morning on 1819. I just had Terry Lathan, former chair of the Alabama Republican Party, on my show. She just kicked off a new group she calls ROME, which stands for Republicans on a Mission. And their whole job, and they've got like 200 members already, they're going to show up at the State House and encourage and exhort and implore legislators to pass school choice, including the Price Act. What do you think about this movement? What do you think about the possibilities of school choice this year? Dale Jackson, you first.
Well, I like that more and more people are talking about it. It's growing a little bit here and there, but call me skeptical. I'm optimistic, but skeptical. I just think the AEA is still too powerful, and I just don't think we're quite there yet.
AEA can't be too powerful if they get a splash pad built out of their education budget. There's that. What do you think, Jeff? Rome, the Rome group from Terry Lathan.
The Rome group, it's good. I don't like this bill that my friend Larry Stutz and Ernie Arborough have. I think you gotta work with more within the body. But let's face it, guys. You know, if y'all really think school choice needs to happen, it needs to start at the governor's office. Probably she needs to come up with a proposal. Is there any reason to think that she'll be the one that does that?
Yeah, well, no, and she's already kind of avoided that topic in her State of the State. And I tell you, I had an article, I didn't even get to it in my stack of stuff for the day. Governor of Texas just went out and led a school choice rally on the steps of his state house, and we can't even get a bill out of committee in our state house right now. Just different world, man, different world. All right, fellas, go ahead.
Real quick, that's the thing. It takes a Sarah Sanders or it takes a strong governor to get it done, and I don't think that's the – and there's no exception to this with Alabama, especially Alabama.
Well, the good thing we got going on, and Dale said it, is it does feel like there's more momentum this year. It does feel like more civic engagement, and I'm hoping at the very least that they go down there and put the shame on some of them who are trying to keep this thing at bay on behalf of the teachers' union lackeys. All right, let's take a break right now. Boomer, round one of the Grand Council with Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5 and 1819 News, and Dale Jackson from 770 AM 92.5 FM and Yellowhammer News, and little old me. Y'all stay tuned. We're back for round two in just a minute. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. So, hey, back with the Grand Council right now. Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile and also the executive editor for 1819 News. And Dale Jackson from up yonder in Huntsville at 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, and writing for Yellowhammer News. So, Dale Jackson, round two, first question, what you got?
John Archibald at AL.com is complaining that a guy was denied parole after he died, when I think he would be less of a threat than ever, but he was still not allowed out. And apparently this is a moral outrage that there was a paperwork snafu, and Archibald demands that they bring every person up for parole before them and look them in the eye before they tell these prisoners to go back to prison. Yet, missing from the article was what this guy was in jail for, number one, and number two, why he deserved to get out before he died. Are we messing up with our parole issue here? Are we keeping too many people in prison because we're not letting as many out as we used to? Is there a real problem here, and is it anything that less than $2 billion will fix?
I don't know where to begin to address this. I guess I'll start off with the fact that it's AL.com. And last night I was cracking up when Jeff Poor posted something on his Twitter feed. AL.com was hosting a live Facebook feed of a what was it called? A drag store or what?
A queer
midwife.
Queer midwife and lactation specialist.
That's yes, because. Yes.
I don't find what's funny about that. I think that's a completely reasonable thing to do.
I feel certain that's true. So, you know, to answer your...
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, you got it. Well, what you got?
Why is the institutional left in the state so hell-bent on the partisan of parole board? I mean, of all the things, I get it. They aren't exactly a very forgiving board, but you don't have, you know, the people that Jimmy Spencer killed in Marshall County, blood on their hands, you know, right? The previous parole board, people wanted reform. They wanted to crack down. And, you know, this might be a bit of an overreaction, but you know, life kind of goes on. And I can't figure out why this is the hill to die on.
It's not, but John Archibald usually likes to pick a thing and just kind of, you know, ruminate on it like a cow bringing its cud back up.
Has John Archibald been in Alabama in the last 5 years? I mean, I'm very skeptical of this
now
because I think he just looks at social media and see whatever Josh Moon or Kyle Whitmire complained about it and just pinned something kind of folksy.
Well, now be careful because he is a Pulitzer Prize winner. You know that, don't you? But anyway, reality.
I would
say this, Dale, in answer to some portion of your extremely long question, I would just go ahead and say that no. I mean, the idea that that we're going to focus on a guy who died in prison who probably needed to be there, why he didn't get parole after he died, I don't understand that the narrative at all. It's just literally trying to find a problem to fit the solution, it sounds like. What if you got any details you want to fill in the blanks on, I'll take them.
No, that was basically it. It just sounds like he died, and then they went and they didn't know he had died before they looked at the paperwork, and they're like, we're not letting this guy out. Boom, stay in jail. Oh, wait, you're dead? Okay, stay there.
Okay. Next question, Jeff, what do you got?
Does the United States need to go to war with Mexico over the seized port of Vulcan materials? It is peculiar why this happened. And I know the delegation's really beaten up on the Mexican government for this, but we've heard nothing from the Biden administration or really many other people. What do you make of this? Why does this seem like it should be a much bigger story?
Well, this morning I saw something as I was leaving the house. Fox was on the TV, and they made a comment that this will be something that strains Biden's foreign policy. And I thought, the assumption is he has a foreign policy. I think what you got multi layers of issues here. First of all, Mexico is a half failed state, and secondly, you've got an Alabama based major manufacturing and employer that is just having its assets seized, and then third, you've got an administration doing nothing. It's a recipe for disaster. We better do some sanctions. We better do some serious negotiation. Find out if Antony Blinken has a pair, and then we'll go from there. But, Dale, real quick, what you got?
Allow me to offer be devil's advocate here. Maybe this is actually a good thing. And that if you take your money and you put it in Mexico instead of America, oh, well, guess you really gambled and lost. Sorry, but there's not much we're going to do about it. Good luck.
The only problem with that is it was a rock quarry with a port to ship out what they were digging out of the ground in Mexico and bringing back to us. So
I know. My point is this. I don't think we're actually going to do much about this because Joe Biden is too busy worrying about how many Mexicans we can allow into the country to deal with any Mexicans that are actually in the country. So I wouldn't worry about that.
I agree with that. Jeff, your own question with about 10 seconds. What do you think?
I mean, they got to do something, right? We can't, because what's next if this is allowed.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Hey, I'll close out with this one. Yesterday afternoon, I had House Minority Leader and Democrat Anthony Daniels on my show, and he was talking about more tax cuts and conservative policy than I've heard Republicans talk about lately. Your thoughts, Dale?
Alabama's most conservative House member is Anthony Daniels. That's kind of what it looks like sometimes.
It does, Jeff.
Yeah, hopefully it inspires Republicans to respond accordingly and start acting like Republicans.
Oh, man. Well put, both of you. Appreciate your time. That closes it out. That was a quick round, it felt like. But yeah, the Grand Council, Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5, The Jeff Poor Show, and executive editor from 1819 News, and Dale Jackson at 770 AM, 92.5 FM up yonder in Huntsville, and also, by the way, writing for Yellowhammer News, and me. All right, y'all stay tuned. We'll come right back for the final half hour. We will be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, I argue, that would be Alabama. I'm talking about the show is broadcast way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back on over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Hey, I got to tell you, we have a new advertiser. You probably heard their ads, especially if you're in the Huntsville market, the Elm Foundation. That's E-L-M, Elm Foundation. It stands for Expect Little Miracles. Elm Foundation is a 501c3, making a difference in people's lives left and right. Unlike the government, which will just sling money at a problem and pretend they did something. Now, the Elm Foundation, they literally get out there with direct service grants and multiple other participants alongside them, making a difference in people's lives, helping them to become, you know, educated, highly employable, getting them off the streets, if you will, and back into the workforce, becoming productive. And here's one of the cool things about it. They're a 501c3, but they have a benefactor that made sure they have all their operating costs covered separately. And so any dollar they raise to do the work they do for the good people of the area is going straight into programs. And that's just awesome. Listen, Elm Foundation, you can find out more about what they do, and I encourage you to do so at their website, ElmHSV, that's E-L-M-H-S-V, as in Elm Huntsville, ElmHSV.org. And if you wind up talking to them or going to one of their meetings or whatever, just tell them you heard about it here on Right Side. I would certainly appreciate it. We talked about ESG. A lot. We talked about woke virtue failing a lot today. Let me put a pin in this one for the day. Third part of the Triple Dipper, I'm calling it ESG-OMG. I'm just, you know, I'm hip like that. I can use those acronyms like those kids do on that texting thing. I know Charlene's in total cringe mode right now. She probably heard me because, oh, stop talking like that. Anyway, here's the deal. If you weren't familiar, ESG, which I had my opening monologue was on this issue, environmental, social, and governance. It's basically when it's more often found in investment management, insurance, and banking, and truthfully in corporate America as well. It's when those major entities decide that their mission in life is not about shareholders and a return on profits or a return on investment, basically profit making. It's when their mission in life is less about that and more what ESG proponents call stakeholder, not shareholder, stakeholder issues. Stakeholders mean we're all in this together. We need to build a better world. Okay, I'm for that, except that your version of a better world might not be mine. And maybe I just want you to take the dollars I invested in your company and make that widget the way you said you would and maximize my return. And if you want to give some of your hard-earned dollars to a 501 that does things you believe in, then go for it. But what we're looking at right now is not that. ESG is when a company sets aside its original mission, or at the very least reduces its impact on the original mission of returning shareholders their profits, and pursues an agenda. ESG standing for environmental, social, and governance, meaning environmental. How much do you do to help green energy? How much do you do to support the Green New Deal? How much do you do to buy carbon offsets? Green. All right, so environmental. Social justice issues. Did you put up a rainbow flag on the last Pride Month? Did you put money into Black Lives Matter? Did you make sure that your corporate agendas included everybody's use of their pronouns at all corporate meetings? Whatever. So, yeah, social. And then governance. Did you take a stand when Georgia passed its photo ID law? Never mind the fact that Alabama had one in place for 5 or 6 years prior to that. Did you do what is necessary to tell Ron DeSantis you're not going to stand by for his Don't Say Gay bill, which had nothing to do with Don't Say Gay? Did you, as a corporation, fight back against conservatives who tried to take a stand on fiscal conservative policy? Whatever. ESG. So here's the thing. In the last go-round of regulatory overreach, in November of this past year, the U.S. Department of Labor issued a regulation that actually permits ESG. Because, you see, the management of retirement accounts is covered under federal law. It's called ERISA. And within ERISA, you have certain definitions that become legal standards. When you have ERISA at play, like on investment portfolios, when you have ERISA at play, you're looking at what it takes to make sure that shareholders, people whose investment portfolios you're managing or whatever, are managed well. And you have to maximize that return. It's important. It's required. It's a fiduciary obligation. Well, the Department of Labor decided to issue a rule that broadened the construct of what is considered to be an investment and what is considered to be lawful under ERISA. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, wait a minute. It's one thing for these companies to go rogue. It's quite another for the government to change the law or the regulatory understanding of what is happening and basically invoke ESG by regulatory fiat through the government action. So anyway, Congress said, ain't going to have it. In a rare effort at bipartisanship, it passed the House and the Senate. Narrow margin in the House because we have a narrow majority. But then it passed with two Democrats joining Republicans in the Senate. And it went to the president's desk. And for the very first veto of his entire presidential career, which hopefully is going to end in about a year and a half, the president of the United States vetoed it. So right now, we're sitting here. And by the way, so Joe Manchin, centrist Democrat, Joe Manchin is livid. Joe Manchin issued a scathing rebuke. Now, Joe Manchin's career is on the line. He knows he's going to wind up having competition. He may not get reelected after all these years. So maybe he's calling it out because that's the way he feels, or maybe he's calling it out because it's politically expedient. But the reality is this. His quote says, West Virginians are under increasing stress as we continue to recover from a once-in-a-generation pandemic, pay the bills amid record inflation, and face the largest land war in Europe since World War II. And this administration's unrelenting campaign to advance a radical social and environmental agenda is only exacerbating these challenges. And he's right. He's absolutely right. So, just so you guys know, the House is going to go ahead and call it up for a vote because you are allowed to override a veto. We did it once in Montgomery when I was down there with Governor Bentley. I forget what this topic was now. But we overrode the governor's veto. You have the opportunity in Congress to override a presidential veto. But it still takes a two-thirds majority. Not just a simple majority, a two-thirds majority. So the same numbers they used to pass the bill ain't going to be enough to override the veto, so it's highly unlikely it's going to happen. But then again, stranger things have happened. And I will say this, it also does exactly what one member of the former George W. Bush administration points out. It puts people on the record again. In fact, I found myself taking my notes here on my articles, holding it up to the camera. This guy, Brad Campbell, a former George W. Bush administration appointee, said, "It seems to me the case for pursuing a veto override is political in terms of highlighting the issue and making members take votes on the record again." I wrote to myself, "What's your point?" Because, yeah, it's exactly what's going to happen. It's always two-pronged. You put people on the record with a true roll call vote, and secondly, you hope for the best on the outcome of the vote. But if you don't get it, you use the vote against them. That's just the way it works. So some are saying, don't even bother, man. It's not going to happen. You know what? We're going to put people on the record. Not only did they vote against it the first time, they voted against the opportunity for an override. This is the will of the people, and they thwarted it. That's what's going to be the story. Now, right here in Alabama, our own attorney general is taking action on ESG, just so you know, and I'm glad of it. And he points out something that I'd forgotten about that happened just last year, is that Alabama has already been harmed, if you will, by ESG efforts. So, story on 1819 News that came out 2 days ago, Attorney General Marshall speaking about fighting ESG, ESG trying to inject issues that create change that they can't get at the ballot box, so they try to do it in your finances. He points out Alabama has been tangibly harmed right here in Alabama. We were harmed as a state when we were going for a bond issue last year. Actually, it may have been the year before. A bond issue with a good rating. I mean, we have a solid rating for bonding here in Alabama. And we went out in the bond market, and leftist ESG, you know, woke critics came out there and just began hammering the bond companies, claiming that this is all about funding incarceration and that harms minorities and whatever. We wound up not getting the bonds that we were hoping for and wound up having to go with a tougher rate to somebody else. And that's just not the way it's supposed to work. But that kind of environmental, social, and governance being mixed in with the finance sector is not the way it's supposed to work at all. And so I'm glad to hear that Attorney General, was that a Freudian slip? There are some who believe, by the way, that Steve Marshall will run for governor. But nonetheless, Steve Marshall says that he is helping lead the charge as a part of the Republican Attorney General Association with a bunch of other states filing suit against ESG, especially in the wake of the fact that the president had an opportunity to put an end to it. No, he wants it. He wants it bad. He's been told, you got to have this. So yes, pull my puppet strings. He signed a veto for the first time. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back and put a lid on a day, a full day. What a great day. All right, you guys, y'all stay tuned. Right Side Radio, we will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Yeah, making it cool to be a conservative. We didn't even hardly get into the text line today. I feel like there were so many that we didn't get to. I apologize. We will do a better job of trying to clean up the text messages next time we're in there. I gotta tell you, Boomer, so the bracket I sit at number 41. You sit where?
83rd.
But then both of us are in the back seat compared to McQueen. Where is she right now?
Yeah, she's in number 5. And she keeps bringing it up every day, and I'm like, hey, just wait till Thursday. I'm going to catch back up.
Thursday could be bracket busting day for McQueen. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of which, so they kick back off tomorrow, right?
They kick back off tomorrow.
So what I'm looking at the,
so we got like in the South, Alabama, San Diego State. We got,
that's Friday, right?
Oh, yeah, that's Friday. Those are the Friday games, Creighton, Princeton. And then you got in the East, Tennessee. And is it Fayetteville? Who is that?
Where you at?
Tennessee and,
in the East.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong place. East.
University?
No, yeah. It's Florida Atlantic.
Oh, Florida Atlantic. Yeah, there we go. Kansas State and Michigan State are the other game. And then in the West, Gonzaga, UCLA, and Arkansas, UConn. I don't
care about Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
Yeah, so my bracket blew up over in the East. So, yeah, I did not see the idea of Kansas State facing MSU. That was not in my cards, man.
Oh,
I was a Marquette, UK guy. I thought sure Kentucky was going to advance.
Yep, and then in the Midwest, you got Houston, Miami, and Xavier in Texas.
Okay, so, Xavier.
Hot dog.
I don't care about Xavier playing Pitt. What's supposed to happen? Just dadgummit. Anyway, yeah, so all right, so Thursday, Friday, we'll see what's left of our bracket at that point. And then we go to the Final Four. All right, who do you have in your Final Four, Boone?
Who do I have?
Yeah.
In the Final Four, I have...
Oh, that's the Elite Eight next, though, isn't it? I'm sorry, I skipped one.
Yeah, it's the Elite Eight right
now. Sweet 16 right now, Elite Eight's next.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so who do you have in your Elite Eight?
In my Elite Eight, I had Bama, Baylor. Not Baylor. Purdue, Kansas State. No Purdue. UConn, Northwestern. No Northwestern. And then Miami, Texas, which I still have.
Yeah, I'm looking pretty right now down yonder in the West. I got Arkansas, UCLA still possible.
Mm.
So there's that piece of my bracket.
I still have the Final Four, though, like that could still meet.
I've got three of the Final Four.
So
I got three of the Final Four still in play. It's all possible. Right. And it's this, but my final is a no-go.
Final's a no-go.
I was going to go ahead. I was all in, brother.
You were.
I was all in for the Iron Bowl finish. I wanted to see an SEC Alabama-centric Iron Bowl finish. I thought that would be the coolest thing ever.
It would have been pretty cool.
That would have been next layer epic.
We would have had to done the show there.
Oh
yeah.
Eating maple bacon donuts.
Maple bacon donuts at the championship game.
That would have been a hoot. All right, so right now I have the possibility of Bama still making it and me finishing out, but I did have Auburn winning. I cracked myself up. That was just like, you talk about wishful thinking. Dadgummit. All right, well, enough of that. Did I have any text messages jump in here on bracket stuff? Yeah, Brian from Huntsville says Gonzaga is good cheese. Yeah, for pizza. John from Huntsville, he gave us an A+ for Phil and Boomer.
Yes.
Fantastic show today, he says. Looking forward to another great installment. Jeff from Indiana, he says, can anyone tell me why we always embrace insanity instead of intelligence? Why people go along with that and always remains a mystery to me? I don't know. But Jeff, If it stopped tomorrow, I wouldn't have a show, bro. I'd be sitting here every day going, well, this went right, and that went right, and I got nothing else, and 2 hours and 57 minutes left to fill. But, you know, whatever. Jimmy from Moulton says, War Eagle, appreciate you, Jimmy. Thank you so much. Brandy from Athens says, hey, Phil, happy hump day. And then she asked me a question about Madison County having a management company instead of the city council issue. And I'll be honest with you, Brandy, I have not researched that issue in depth. I got some concerns, but I need to make sure that I have read up before I attempt to opine. So forgive me for trying to get ready first. We may have to come back and make that a topic. That's interesting. JT from Lacey Springs, he said on that call earlier, he said Sparky confirms it in regards to retirement. You don't work less. You just work for less money.
There you go.
With regards to SVB Bank, I think it was, Patrick from Grove Oak says, is this the bank where our VP had bail money for Antifa? And he says, by the way, VP was not capitalized on purpose. Nice little passive aggressive dig there. I see it. Anyway, we got a great audience and we appreciate y'all. Can't get enough of you guys. Jeff from Holly Pond said 90% of education starts and ends at home with the parents. I agree. Mm. Julie from Hillsboro, referring back to wokeness, and I mentioned the fact that Target was the first one out the gate with their transgender bathrooms. She says, I'm still boycotting Target over their restroom policy. And somebody else said that they had somebody go and apply for a job at Target and were told that they were not liberal enough and they didn't get the job. Ooh. I mean, what the heck? Shouldn't be that way.
No.
No, in fact, I'm pretty sure there's a lawsuit in the offing for that one. And then, of course, somebody had to. Alex from Elkmont wants to know, any news on the cow fart tax?
Somebody had to bring up the cow farts.
That may have been one of our most epic out-of-control segments cow fart tax. And made even more so by Jeff from Indiana saying that they ought to tax him when he has a bag of White Castles with onions.
With the onions. Oh, man.
All right. Listen, I hear the music playing. That means the preacher stops preaching. You guys have an amazing night. Boomer and I will be with you soon. Y'all stay tuned. Right Side Radio, we love you.